I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is the God Journey. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and Brad Cummings is not here today. I took a two-week vacation, I got back, and Brad has vanished. So I understand he's traveling somewhere, so you guys keep your eyes open. If you see Brad out there, send him home. So rather than do this alone, I invited my lovely wife to join us.
Hello.
So, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and you're?
Sarah Jacobson.
And we're here to do the podcast this week since Brad's, I believe he's in Nashville, I think, making all
I
kinds of...
I have no idea where he is.
But he'll be back by the time this airs, so don't go looking for him, because I think he'll be back home. But then I'll be in Tulsa when he gets here, and then you're coming with me out to Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yep.
And we're going to, gosh, I'm doing a couple of women's events, so I thought, I guess that's a way to get Sarah to go. I felt like I needed some cover, so...
So a number of women scare you? Is that what it is?
No, they don't scare me. It's just I don't want them to feel overmatched. I think that's it.
Oh, wow.
How cruel is that?
That's pretty cruel.
But you're fresh back from vacation. Did you have a good time?
Yes, we did.
I did. Oh, I'm just asking
about
you.
Well, you said you did.
Earlier.
Everybody has said that they had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
How many did we take on our vacation?
Several people.
We took a lot. We woke up every morning for 12 mornings with our granddaughters.
Yes.
Wow, that was fun.
Yes, coming down the stairs and always saw Amy first because she was always sitting at the table still eating her breakfast. And Grandma's up. And then you hear that, then the other one, little Lindsay.
Turbo comes around the corner.
Watch it. Mom might not like that.
So she calls her Turbo. What do you think?
I don't know, but that's different to have Mom call it than have it be a broadcast.
Oh, I don't think so. Julie's not going to care. She calls her Turbo. We saw her the first day. She comes around the corner, full speed, right into the coffee table, punches her right in the chest. She fell down like she never saw it coming. She was just looking around like, gosh, how did that happen? And then she just got up and took off again. So
that was so way too funny.
That's the name Turbo. But where were we?
Are you going to let people know now?
I've already told them.
Oh, you have? Where did you tell them?
We were in Hawaii. We were in Hawaii.
Yes.
We didn't tell anybody because I've seen this movie, What About Bob? Which
the rest of the family thinks it's hilarious. But
the rest
you
of
and
the family other... hasn't had Bob show up on their vacation before.
Well, and we didn't this time, did we?
No, because I didn't tell people where I was going, so Bob didn't show up. So we had a great time, and
yes,
we got to do a little snorkeling. I tell you, two things I did on this vacation got a rank in the top 10 of awe-inspiring moments from my life. One of them was you missed. One of them, Julie and Tyler, my son-in-law.
By choice.
Well, you were doing child care, so it was important.
Well, no, by choice.
But we went out snorkeling at night off the coast of Kona, Hawaii, where these manta rays come in to feed at night, and they use lights to draw the plankton, which is what the manta rays eat. And you go out and hang by this little bar, hold on to this little bar in the darkness, and you look down into the light, and you watch these manta rays. And they're huge. They're like 12 feet from stem to stern, or I guess from starboard to port. Mm. And they come right up to you, even bump you against the chest. They come so close.
I like Andy's description. He said that was creepy.
Andy is our son, who will snorkel during the daylight, which Sarah won't do.
Nope.
Sarah's not a water freak.
Nope.
Unfortunately, she married one, so.
Well, and we have Julie, who
My
is kind of like a fish out there, too. She loves being in there.
So one of it was snorkeling, which we thought was absolutely at night to be so close to these wonderfully gentle creatures that are just humongous, and they would come at you with a mouth agape that was probably 4 feet wide open, sucking in this plankton. They come right for your head, and then they would just turn and roll over and do a flip.
Doesn't sound good to me.
I'm telling you, it's one of those moments where you just go, God, you did some amazing stuff in creation. And then the next night, we went on a little airplane flight over to see the volcano on the other side.
And where did you sit?
I played co-pilot for the evening.
Played? Yes.
Well, I'm not seriously flying the aircraft, but had a good time. And the pilot asked for some help in directing him when he was making tight right-hand turns since he couldn't see the edge into the wing. So I was telling him to steeper or shallower, and we went out there. But we had one of those nights, and I don't know if tour operators are set to tell you this. We've had a few things where, yeah, this is the best ever. And you kind of go, yeah, I bet you say that to everybody because you want people to go away feeling like they've had a great experience. But he did say that 90% of the time they never see this. And what he said he saw on this flight with us was the best he had ever seen it. We flew over the caldera of the volcano. This is off Kilauea on the backside of the big island of Hawaii. And there's this big caldera where the lava comes to the surface, but doesn't come out onto the land. It actually goes into a big lava tube that takes it way down to the coast. But we flew right over at a time when there was just an amazing amount of activity. And you could actually look into the caldera way down below, just a glow, which said normally we just see a little glow. We looked way down beyond that to where the lava was bubbling.
Yeah.
300 feet below the surface of the earth. And it had this feeling like you were looking down at the core of the planet.
Yeah, that was kind of eerie.
It was eerie. You're such a thrill seeker. That's why I married you.
It was beautiful and amazing, but at the same time, eerie.
I was
very glad when I got my feet back on the ground.
And then as we were flying off to look at another vent, I looked off to my right, and I saw this huge lava flow going down the hillside. And I turned to him. I said, is that normal? He looked like, oh, no. And he turned the plane, and we flew over there. And he said this is only one or two times he's seen it, not this large. And it was just where lava was breaking out of the lava tube on the surface. It's halfway probably between the caldera and the actual ocean. And there was these long fingerlets of lava flowing. This was a night flight. This is the only guy licensed to fly tourists at night. He's a friend of ours. He used to be an Afghanistan pilot, military pilot. And he's a friend of a friend, and he recommended we do this. So we went that evening. And I'm telling you what, to fly over.
Beautiful.
Oh, orange, brilliant glow. I'll try and put up a picture for those of you that are saying, whoa, I'd like to see what that looked like. Got a little picture on my Facebook page, but that's not going to help some of you not on Facebook.
It was a little bumpy at times.
It was a bumpy going over the heat, and then we flew all the way down to the coast where the actual lava tube is breaking into the ocean.
You could see the explosion going on when it was going into the water. So was amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing. We're seeing the newest land on Earth created, which was fun. And then as we were flying back, he was talking about how far out into the heavens we were seeing. There's big telescopes up on Mauna Kea. And it was a beautiful moonlit night with the stars. It was just gorgeous evening. So we kind of looked back in time to the beginning of creation and saw the newest land created on Earth. That was a wonderfully awe-inspiring evening. Another one of those. You
know. Yes, it was very good.
And we got back safe, which you think is always the best part of that.
Well, yeah. When you're standing there before you get in the plane, he's giving you a little folded pouch of life jacket, a life vest, and then he's going through all the safety procedures.
Yeah, we're
going
to be over water for like 3 minutes. And he was saying, but if we go down, we'll be so low that he won't have time to get back to land. So,
yeah, we were pretty low. You could feel the heat coming off of that lava.
So the best part of vacation for you?
The best part?
Yeah.
I think just being with the whole family in different situations, not one particular thing. It was a lot of fun having them around and being with both of the girls during that time. And nobody killed each other.
And our daughter and son-in-law and had 12 days together and had a great time.
Huh? And, we didn't... No arguments at all.
No.
So that was good.
We used the camp manual. The camp manual is a very important piece of literature to help you vacation with people because it has all kinds of helpful hints in it, but it's not ever been written down. You just have to know it intuitively. And one of the camp manual things is no one has to do anything and no one gets to get hurt at anybody. So
Until the very last the next day, Julie put the camp manual on me. That was when I was trying to get that one little...
You were throwing...
I was not throwing. It was half-dead.
You were hurting a half-dead cockroach, which in Hawaii, these are pretty large creatures out of our humble abode. So.
And I was just telling her that to get out of the way because I was trying to get out of the house.
And so Julie invoked the camp manual that you cannot throw insects at your daughter or something like that. I'm not sure. I think she's making that up, but anyway.
I agree with that one, too.
Hey, we'll get on with some of the other things we'll talk about here in a minute. Just wanted to thank those of you that have helped us with the Kenya thing. We do have enough money for the current relief efforts that we're directing that way. So if you have sent it in. We are very, very grateful. Thank you very much. If you haven't, wondering if you should, hey, the need's covered. Don't sweat it. We may be coming back down the road. This is an ongoing need. One of the things we're starting to do now with these folks, and we've gotten past some of the immediate relief, though we're still doing some of that. We're also doing some microfinancing of little tiny loans to help people start businesses. So we're not just giving fish, we're teaching people how to fish. So.
And he's given accounting for some a large part of
Vincent. They've been great at helping, giving us pictures and things of all that's going on and accounting of who got what dimes and shekels. And we also had some contact this week with people who may be helpful in getting some wells into some of the drier areas that just don't have any water. Some of the men go 5 hours to find water for the day. So we're going to try and help there some more, but things are cool right now, so hopefully that's good. Also, Danny Silk should be with us next week. That's the plan. We haven't heard recently from him, but he's the author of Loving Our Kids on Purpose. You read the book?
I'm almost done.
Oh, you haven't?
I fell asleep on the plane coming home.
Yeah, my wife's great on an airplane. She's just going to sleep for nobody's
business. Well, with all the kids there and everything, I didn't get much reading time in.
You got a lot of help with makeup, though.
Yes, Lindsay did like to do the makeup thing
Lindsay
with me in the morning.
Lindsay was through Sarah's makeup bag every morning trying to pretend she was doing everything Sarah was doing. So
hopefully Mom's adjusting well with having the two back to herself all day long.
I don't know about you. I'm going through grandparent withdrawal, though. It's been now, gosh, 5 days since we've seen
really
the kiddos. So. Anyway, Danny Stokes will be with us next week. We've got some questions. Some of you have already sent some wonderful questions, so we're not needing more questions. But if you have some, you might want to send them along to Brad or me at our email addresses, and we'll try to work as many of those in with Danny as we can, talking about parenting our kids. Got this email this week. Someone was listening to another podcast last week, and they were talking about, I thought this might be fun for Sarah and I to do, even though she said, I'd like to hear you and Brad talk about this. Brad and I may up the road, but right now, and this is from Julie, but not our daughter. This is a different Julie. And she said the topic of the show is about staying committed to your marriage and the benefits of that. They, along with their guests, talked about the benefits of being committed to anything, music, sports, academia, and how you don't have the best results unless you stay committed, even when, or probably especially when, it's hard. I started thinking about the church and maybe failing by not being committed to their pastors and leaders. Well, that's a whole other discussion.
That's a different issue.
At the first sign of trouble, she said, they fire the pastor and get new leadership, or oftentimes people just get mad and leave. So how is that the model of what God really wants for any relationship? We wonder why divorce rates are up. Could it be the church models we're getting when things get tough, we bail out? It's a whole perspective of commitment. She said, I'm still working through the God journey thing, and sometimes I feel guilty for not being committed to the church. I need to keep telling myself that my commitment is to God, His Word, and not to the church, as our culture defines it. I'd love to hear you and Brad just talk about this commitment thing. I don't know if you have had a broadcast in the past about it, as I have not had time to listen to them all the prior ones yet.
Well, I think commitment to a church is a lot different than commitment to a marriage or relationship.
You know, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I always struggle with the word commitment. I don't even like the word commitment, because to me, if you love somebody, genuinely love them, you're with them for the long haul.
You're going to do it.
Yeah. To me, commitment is, I don't love you, but I'm committed to stay with you.
Well, I don't know if you're saying I don't love you. I think it's a level. It doesn't feel like a feelings involved in there. It's more just an action that you're doing and not a feeling in that. But I think in a relationship, I think maybe at times you're committed in the tough times to stick it through, but that's really the love is there to
I understand what you're saying, and I think a lot of people treat it that way. I just don't like the word. We got married now. We're just past our 34th anniversary.
34th.
And we got married, you know, I saw marriage as a commitment. I'm committing to live the rest of my life with you, come hell or high water. That's what it was. And yeah, there have been times in our marriage, I would say, where we just, but I don't know if I've ever lived, that's why I go back and go, I don't know if I've ever just felt committed to a promise with you so much as I just think somehow the day we got married, the alternative of not living with you went away. So it wasn't that I've ever thought divorce was a possibility, or even through some of the tougher moments in our marriage. It's never been a possibility, but not a possibility because I was committed, but because...
Well, maybe committed comes out when the
Did you just interrupt me?
Yes. I did.
Wow, you had like Brad over there.
Well, now I don't remember what I was saying.
No, I understand commitment. I understand that people, what people say about we should stick it out no matter what. I guess what I want to challenge people to think of is a marriage doesn't work just because people are committed to it. A marriage works because people genuinely love each other. And what I love about even being with you on vacation, there's no one in the world I'd rather be with than you. No matter what, even if we don't enjoy the same thing, and we don't. You won't go snorkeling. You hate putting your face in the water. So even the last day, you go to the beach with me, and you'll sit on the beach, and I'll go snorkel for a while. And I'll get up early, and I'll go play around a golf somewhere, which doesn't interest you. You've tried that. Didn't work out. And yet, as far as going on vacation, I wouldn't go with anybody but you. I mean, you're my most favorite person to hang out with, even though we don't always do all the same things together every minute of a day. We don't. We have different interests and different desires.
But that's you. I mean, that's us. And I think that can each couple has their own little relationship. And sometimes they may do everything together. Sometimes they may not do anything. But that can be unique. It's from one relationship to another. But I think commitment comes in, I don't know what, in terms, I think a lot of times it comes in for people when the relationship may not be going well or they have had problems or issues and then, you know, they just, I said I was going to be with them and you commitment. I mean, I don't think of it that way. But, you know, what do people do when they're going through hard times? And every marriage is going to have your ups and downs, you know, and working. But if one person decides to walk away and not, you can't make a person want to stay in a relationship.
No, you can't make someone else be committed. That's true. And I guess the other reason I like committed, because if one person is committed, and I've seen this happen in marriages, two things. One, they're just committed. So their relationship is miserable. They hardly even enjoy each other, but they're going to stay together no matter what because that's what they promised to do.
Sometimes they stay together for kids or whatever. I don't know if that's not a real healthy relationship.
Well, I think if you at least stay together, you give God the chance to fix it. Now, I hope you'd give him the chance to fix it. I hope you wouldn't just say the goal is to spend the rest of our lives in this horrible relationship, but actually say, if I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you, let's make this the best it can be. Let's continue to explore that. The other side of it is people where one partner is committed to this relationship and the other one starts to back out of it so that the person who's not committed in terms of being a part and taking responsibility and changing to help the marriage be better, they take advantage of the person who's committed so that, I know that person's never going to leave me, so I'm going to live like this selfish sluggard and victimize this person. So to me, there's some downsides to the whole commitment thing.
Well, I mean, we all change because obviously if you go back to those 34 years ago and we would have dreamed where we would be 34 years from now, I don't think we would be anywhere near close to what.
You're not at all that same girl I dated in college.
And that, like
you're
I said,
not when, even close.
When you're talking about where, because I did change.
Tremendously.
And
we both changed in terms of our spiritual passions and desires. We both changed drastically since we got married.
And I changed personally, too. But then in that commitment, and that was a little bit of rough time through that. But then you loved me enough to then let me change and love the one, the change Sarah that came. I mean, my whole personality changed. I mean, I'm still myself, but I changed. But then you came along and loved that. What if I changed and you didn't love me in that? I mean, there could have been a parting of ways. If somebody is changing, doesn't mean that, you know, we didn't go into this. You loving them for better and for worse. Someone gets sick, terminally ill, loving them through that.
Or debilitated. Watch your parents deal with that. Watch my brother and his wife deal with his multiple sclerosis, your dad's Parkinson's.
Yeah.
It can happen that your partner ends up not even being able to contribute to the marriage in the same way, and one becomes a caretaker.
I think in some of that, then mom and dad, and I don't know, they never said that, or, you know, Rod and Kathy, I mean, maybe love had to take on a form, or I don't know how to describe that, of a commitment for a while, or that commitment sustained the love. Because I saw a lot of times during that where it wasn't easy caring for one, and but yet I knew the love was there, but like you said, commitment. I'm trying to figure out a different word that you could use for this.
People are going to use commitment because it's a word that's often used for that. I like the word devotion, being devoted to. I feel
A lot better.
I think devoted to me focuses on the person, and committed focuses on a marriage vow I made, which. I mean, I took seriously when you and I got married. I took that very seriously, that I'd pledge the rest of my life to you. But what I love about our marriage is we didn't take that as, so I can treat you any way I want because you're stuck in this relationship.
No.
It was, let's make a journey together. My ideal has always been the Ephesians 5 scripture where Paul invokes the language from Genesis where he says the two will become one flesh, that the goal of God in marriage wasn't to have two people in subservience one to another, that one's in charge and no one has to go along, that the whole goal of God in marriage was to bring two people together and make one life out of the two lives. And that's been misconstrued, means we all have to do the same thing and have the same vision, which it doesn't. It means we can support each other's vision and support each other's journeys. We talked about on a previous podcast, gosh, over a year ago probably.
And how that changes. But, you know, love is not, it has a feeling touch to it at times, but then sometimes it's not. When you're working through some issues or you're facing, you know, such as illnesses, or you could have financial problems, you know, for people who have lost, we've seen many people who have lost a child, which is very, very hard for a couple, and some of those couples don't even sustain and be able to maintain marriage through that. I mean, there's so many different things that can happen that come along with just living and
Being
broken world.
Life throws at you some big curves, and a lot of people turn their grief about losing a child against their partner, and most of them end up in divorce. I think statistics are like 60% or some crazy thing. And it's 50% normally, 60% if you lose a child, some crazy thing. But the reality is, when we got married, two very selfish people got married.
Mm-hmm.
You're just selfish when you're that young, and you really get married because of what the other person does for you. And then you get involved in a relationship. And I think this is maybe where commitment hopefully takes people, if you want to use the word of devotion, which is I somehow, and I think God does this by bringing us together. And people joke about, you know, opposites attract. But what the whole idea of marriage, the hope of marriage being transforming, is that it confronts us with our selfishness. If we're not just going to use our partner to get what we want, but actually find a life together that, I know we're working on a book. We haven't shared this too widely. Sarah and I have been working on a book, but it's kind of down my list of books that we're working on.
It's down there.
Only and Always. Every romance, even from the world, when someone's in love, it's only and always. It's you only, and it's you forever. That's always the promise of love. And yet, so many times that promise goes unfulfilled, because usually it begins with, I want you only and always for what you do for me right now. And if that doesn't grow out of that selfishness, if our relationship to another human being doesn't move us from, I'm going to get from you what I want and then toss you aside, then it just, and we've had that too. We haven't had that in our relationship, but you and I have known people that we've made great sacrifice for and commitment and love to, and wanted our help in a major way with their lives, and then got to the point where they decide, I've got all the benefit I want from you.
And then leave.
So I'm not just leave. I'm going to toss you aside. I'm going to take what you haven't given me. And I'm going to take what you gave me, and then I'm going to take more. And in doing that, and this is why I love when people break commitments, and they, where their own word is meaningless to them. And that is, not only do they have to break the word and break the commitment, but they also want to do it in a way that says, I'm doing this because you're a cruddy person. So they make up whatever story they need to about you being horrible. That's one. And then the other thing is, oh, and by the way, God told me to do this. This is for your good. Man. If that ever happened to me in marriage, and I've been through a few of these experiences in my life with people I've been in business with or in ministry with, that it's been really, really painful. And I remember looking at you saying, man, if this were between you and me, this would be the worst.
Yeah.
This is bearable, because these are just people, and I can go on from that. If this happened in this relationship, I don't know what it would mean.
But don't people think, I mean, there are some people we've known through the years who just, and they were mainly single women, just so wanted to get married. And they, and then, and most of the time I think they did get married, but then on the other end, they saw the work that is involved, because it really takes two. And I say that because it takes two to make, make the marriage, two that they decide to lay down, like you said, help work through the, our self, selfishness that we have, thinking of the other one, trying to come, and there's a lot of, you know, not maybe compromises, but there's kind of things, you know, if we do this, maybe we can do that, and to be able to make it work through the years, to be able to find it. I mean, I think we're very blessed, our, how we, our marriage has been where it's at, and it's just, it's not ooey-gooey every single day. It's not that, but it...
But it has become that.
Yes.
I think now 34 years into it, or I'd say the last 6-7 years...
Yes.
I don't remember any bad days.
No.
I mean, days we might get impatient about something or whatever, but, I mean, I really treasure the relationship. The part of it might be that we travel. We're not together every night, so there are, that increases, that absence makes the heart grow fonder thing. I think that's part of it. But I also think... Somehow we have that the only and always ideal is that we somehow get on a page where there's something that is us, that neither of us asks the other one to compromise their conscience to do something we want, but that both of us are working towards something that expresses us. I can be in this with my full heart. Well, I can be in this with my full heart. And when we do that, we find those places that are unique. And that also allows, and there's things that you enjoy that I don't enjoy.
Yep.
That go for it. There's things I enjoy that you don't.
Yep.
Go for it. But building that space of where I so care about you or you care about me, they were almost, I think Paul uses this phrase, outdo one another in doing good. He says that for the body of Christ. And we've gotten caught at times. It's almost an unspoken thing. But you're doing something for me that I really love, and then I'm doing something back to make you, and almost to the point of trying to one-up the other one in being good or being kind or being a blessing or just being fun.
Yeah.
And those are fun moments. When you totally lose, I don't have to grab anything here because you're caring for me, so that I can be sneaking around thinking, now how do I bless Sarah? What do I do for her that's kind of going to blow her little mind because it's kind of out of her box of what she'd expect from me?
I mean, that's how we're different, and that's where coming together and intertwines. I guess God intertwines a couple when he lets them, and where... You know, with you, like you said, you know what, I know what you like to do. You know what my loves are. And, you know, for years ago, you didn't like it when I was gardening on Saturday after 12 o'clock because you...
Oh, you're just going to tell everybody about this?
No, because you didn't, to you it was work.
I felt like I should help you, yeah.
And to you it was work. You didn't want me out there because it was work. To me, I love the garden, and it's
where,
like,
you relax.
Garden. I mean, garden is a place to be out there, and you in the creation, and like then you help. You know,
manta rays are better if you're going to be in the creation. Just so
you know. No.
You think flowers?
Yes. Oh yes, yes, yes. Flowers.
Oh,
but then
boy.
when we got out here, we, you know, you helped to create a garden area and getting a place and getting it in Oversaw and helped design the whole thing. But you put your effort and love, even though that's not something that you wanted, because you think, you see that's all just work to you. But that's a place where I go and relax and love. And so it's just helping in us be who we are and giving us the space and the freedom to be that. And I think that's what makes it work.
That's probably because I grew up a farmer family, and I grew up with the really inside work is women's work, outside work is a guy's work. And so for me, man, outside working in a garden is just, I no interest in it. I'd live in a condo with no yard if I had my choice.
I know.
Sarah likes the yard, likes the dog, so likes the flowers. But we've really reached that freedom I just wanted to know, if you're out there working in an afternoon in your garden, that you're enjoying that. So if I'm reading somewhere or watching a golf tournament,
you're enjoying
I don't
that.
Have to sit there and go, gosh, I probably should be out there helping Sarah. And that just comes by a lot of communication.
Yes, it does. Communication is really big.
Because relationships work. And I think this is why God designed us for relationship and why it is that the fall destroys them so much, is that relationships, real relationships, challenge our selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And selfishness destroys relationship. Anytime yes. we're using the other partner for our gain is very different than my partner, my spouse, giving up something because they want to do something that blesses me. Very different if I ask for it or demand it. Much more fun when the partner just says, you know what, I know my husband, my wife really enjoys this. So, again, not to the point of compromising their conscience ever. No, I would never ask you to do something that you just felt like, oh, gosh, I couldn't do it. That would be wrong.
And if it was crossing that, to be able to have the communication to where you can speak up and the safety net that's there to where you can be able to say, I'm not feeling comfortable with doing that.
Yeah, we want us. I want something your whole heart's in. Yep. You want something my whole heart is in. And that leads not to just selflessness, or I'm just always choosing what I hate for my part. That's not a real marriage either.
No.
And I know we get this letter a lot from people who, you know, spouses, particularly in the God journey, aren't on the same page. One spouse really loves the whole Sunday morning event and affair, and the other partner is kind of not there anymore. And what do we do? It's usually the question I get. How do I get my spouse to see? And yeah, I see you shaking your head.
You can't.
That's what I do. Anything that begins with how do I get anyone, and especially spouse, to see something is a lose-lose. You
can't
get them.
And why would you? Because you're crossing. God gave us freedom, and we give freedom to others, and that especially in a relationship, because once you give freedom, it's going to come back. It's not going to help if you're going to try to get that person.
Yeah, or somebody seriously, my spouse won't let me. I'm like, what? Since when does your spouse have that power to let you or not let you? We're all decision makers.
Yes.
And if marriage becomes the manipulation of each other, it's destructive. And that's why I think people who are in manipulated relationships who are just committed, that's very, very dangerous. That's a very dangerous place to be. But if you're committed or if you're not just committed to a relationship, but devoted to a person, that's what I want to say, then you're going to work through whatever it is that's causing some stress in the marriage. And you're not wanting to just have the other person pretend to like something they don't like or go along with something and really go along. And so I tell some of these couples, hey, if your spouse still wants to go to a traditional congregation on Sunday morning, I would go oftentimes with you. I would. If that's your deal, because I love you, I'd be there. Now, some are just saying, I can't do that. The language is so manipulative. And for a time, if you can't, you can't. That's just honest, too. But you're best not finding a common journey by we're going to do the same things, but by respecting each other's point of view, respecting each other's place in the journey, and supporting your spouse, whether or not what they're doing is what you'd prefer to be doing.
Yes.
That gives the hope to me. I think we've had this. People have asked sometimes, you guys have always been on the same page. No. We've had the fortunate ability to be in the same chapter most days. And my heart hurts for spouses who are on very different chapters, maybe even reading different books. But I've also seen spouses make that work. If I love and respect you, even if you're an unbeliever, and I think Paul gives us this hope in 1 Peter 3, even if you're an unbeliever, if I can love and respect your journey, that's going to get you to sort out even Christ faster than if I'm trying to convert you so that I'll be happier if you share my faith.
Yeah.
Because that will wear us out. And I think it has at times prevented people from really loving their spouse because, well, they're not a Christian. So love them. Go do what they do. Go enjoy life with them to the full. And maybe this faith journey, they'll be able to share at some point. Maybe they're not, but you should. I mean, it'd be wonderful to still enjoy them as a friend.
Yes.
And have life with them and not say, well, yeah, I can't until you're a believer, because that just where you're at.
But that's, I mean, if you're friends and if your spouse is your best friend, what a relationship that is. I don't know what it would look like if that is not there where, you know, you find friends. And obviously, guys are going to have friends. Women are going to have friends outside of that. And that's very, very important to have those other relationships, but hopefully spouses are friends, and hopefully they can be or are your best friend. That makes it a big difference, I think, in a relationship.
Yeah, so Julie, I think, you know, what you're saying about commitment, although we're kind of fussing with the word, that's mostly semantics, I think. Being devoted to someone, particularly in a marriage, I think that's really key.
Yes.
I think in friendships, it's important.
Definitely.
Devoted. I think other friendships, you're the only lifetime friendship I have. I may get others, but no one has to.
No.
Bad word, but no one, and I do have lifelong friendships. I have people that we've enjoyed our whole married life and people back to my high school days that I still enjoy connecting with in this life. I guess the when you take commitment to church, that's where it gets a bit weird for me, because I think that's what a lot of abusive pastors ask for. Be committed no matter what. Don't stretch your hand out against God's anointed. They ask for a commitment to them as if they are a spouse, and they're not. To the degree that God gives us connection, that I regard you a positive influence in my life and the gifts God's given you, I'll hang around. To the degree that you're going to use a position in an institution to manipulate me or others with guilt or fear, then I'm either going to try and help you see that you're doing that, or I'm going to walk away from it. And I do think people in, whether it's a house church situation, a traditional congregation, or anything, if you're just there because you're committed to it and your heart's not in it, I'm not thinking that's valuable.
No.
But at the same time, I would agree with Julie. I think that people do leave things too early. It's easy for people to avoid the honest conflict. Most people would rather just avoid honest conflict as opposed to having that honest conflict first.
Well, I'm not a conflict person. I don't like confrontation. Never have. Probably never will.
But you
will.
Know, you've learned to be honest.
Most of the time, yeah.
For the last 20 years, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm particularly honest with me. I don't feel like, I used to feel like I have to ask you 27 times to get you to tell me the truth.
So if I say that's fine, I mean that's fine.
Now you do. That's fine used to mean we'll do whatever you want because I don't have any wants I care about. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want you to pout if you don't get your way. That was a big part of the whole selfishness. But I tell you, I love the transformation that comes in a wonderful long-term relationship. And people who bail on it, people who bail early, and not just marriage, but even friendships are, you know, I can understand if you get into a relationship and you've promised some things that now as the relationship's changed and altered, you don't feel like you can any longer give. I understand that. I don't understand why you wouldn't come personally have that conversation instead of just betray your word and go do whatever it is you want to do. To me, that is destructive and hurtful. It does make people feel used. It does say, okay, you took all the benefit I could give you, and then you ran off. I guess probably women feel that way, who husbands go out and get a trophy wife or something later on in life. You used me to raise kids, used me for this part of your life. Now you just want, and it's, again, it's just that selfishness thing that I don't respect people around me. And ultimately, I don't respect my own word. I don't even respect the things that I say. And what I've learned is this. Once somebody doesn't respect their word and they can't be honest and they can't follow through on things they promised, even to their own detriment at times, which, you know, I met with someone this morning that wants me to take a book and help them with it. And, you know, we just met to see if there's anything that is there. And I don't know if that's true yet. But I did say to them, I'll be honest with you, you are dealing, because they're going, you know, I haven't copyrighted this yet, and you know, I'm not fine, you know. I said, you're probably dealing with the most, and I know you don't know this because you don't know me at all, but I said, I, every relationship I've been in, I can look back and say, I did what I said I would do. Even at times when it cost me more than I thought it would, I was still faithful to that. And I guess I was just raised that way. My folks, my dad particularly, was just a man of his word. If he told you it, you could take it to the bank. It didn't need a contract, didn't need a lawyer to fight it. He told you what he would.
Well, years ago, though, that's when our parents, I mean, word was their bond. It is not that way anymore. But, I mean, I was in a rural area that I grew up. Your word was your bond. But then also, I think now you were talking about leaving early. I think society and all the, you know, that's out there with the movies and TV and everything. If there's hard problems or if there's struggles between, I mean, people just leave and jump and bail out of relationships. There's not that. I mean, even in our whole society, it is more to where I think they're apt to. If it gets tough, they're going to be going instead of staying and sticking it through.
It is what Paul said, though. I think our maturity in Christ as we grow in him and our freedom in him, as Paul says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you need lawyers and you need contracts, which now in this publishing world, the place where we're flying now, and I've gotten a new thing from our lawyer this week about contract commitment thing. I have to have people sign before I even look at a manuscript they want me to see. And I'm not looking at many these days, so don't sit there and think, I'm going to send mine to Wayne. And it just, it's reprehensible to me. I look at this thing and go, okay, I've got to have somebody sign this before I can even look at, because we're a big target now, and people can sue us for stealing an idea.
Well, that's, that is the
that's the world we live in.
Yeah, because you got judges who are the court system.
Okay, let's not go there now.
Why should you go? I mean, who are putting into the court system things that shouldn't even be there. And so
I agree.
You have to protect yourself, even individuals. You know, why we have all these other insurances and why we have other things. You know.
Lawyers and contracts instead of the honesty of a relationship. And for me, that's where it's no fun anymore. If my working together with people is just brothers and sisters on a journey together, celebrating friendship, that's great stuff. When it becomes a business with contracts and lawyers and management people who are only looking out for the self-interest of one party, I tell you what, I lose my heart for the whole thing, because that's not – and I would lose my heart for marriage if it got there. I mean, I'd still stay with you because that's the deal. But I love the fact that you and I have found a way to walk inside a relationship that is an incredible amount of fun. We take on some incredible challenges together, you and I, and the things that we work on, the things you and I have to agree on any given day, particularly these days. Mm. But it has been absolutely a joy to live and love you. And I really do think if marriage had been a matter of convenience, if God hadn't said, look, one partner for life, there might have been days back there we'd say, you know, and I'm really done with this. I think I'll try somebody else. But I think I read a statistic recently, something like 85% of people who divorce and remarry within 5 years wish they'd stayed with their original spouse and worked things
out. And that's where it comes in, where people tend to jump, if you want to say, out of the boat too early and before it gets in. So,
but you've got to risk your selfishness. You've got to grow up and stop living life around yourself. And for a lot of people in our day, our world is more and more about me, me, me. I want what I deserve to be fulfilled. And you do. God wants to bring you to a place of fulfillment. But you're going to get there faster by letting him disarm the selfishness of your life, because you really don't know what you want for yourself, even though you think you do. You're going to get there faster letting the selfishness be disarmed rather than forcing your selfishness on people so you can get what you want.
So maybe this is not a question I should ask.
Oh, well, you better hurry. Time's almost up. We got people missing bus stops and everything else.
I just wonder, with what we have developed over the years and has turned into, is that possible for others? I don't think it's unique. I don't think what is unique. I think it's possible. You know, I know so many who struggle.
I do, but I think what makes this work is not we're great people.
There's nothing special about us.
No, it's just this. You've been willing to change to be part of my life. I've been willing to change to be part of yours. God's grown us up in that. Again, we started very selfish kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of frustrated about things that didn't go our way, certainly. And you weren't even honest about what you wanted out of a marriage for a long time because you weren't trained to be that way. It takes two people that are honestly willing to grow, take each other seriously, and take the God journey seriously. I want God to keep shaping me. The better I love God.
Mm-hmm,
and
definitely.
Let me say it this way. The better I'm loved by God, the better I'll love you.
Because if you can know that you're loved by him, why would you not then in turn around and give that love to others and receive that love? Because we know when we're loved so much that we're not perfect.
Yeah.
We know we aren't perfect. And so he gives us grace to be able to love those who are around us and be able to love them, even over all their imperfections.
Yeah, and I think that can be a great marriage, even if only one of the person is doing that. If the person who's living loved and loving can find great grace in that, not letting the other person take advantage of it. Loving somebody isn't letting somebody walk all over you. It never is.
No.
But if both people are doing it, then I think you have a hope for a great lifelong friendship that I will love you only and love you always in this life. And I tell you what, I've never enjoyed it more than I do right now.
Me
love
too.
You, doll.
Love you, too.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.